Coming up on the Fronteras program, where do the candidates for Texas governor stand on border security?
We want to ensure that the community here in the Rio Grande Valley, as well as any community in the state of Texas, is going to be safe and secure.
We also should have asked those who have been serving the needs of folks who've been coming across the border, the humanitarian side of this issue.
Republican Greg Abbott and Democrat Wendy Davis's positions on border security. Dia de los Muertos. It's a time to remember and celebrate loved ones who've passed away. But it's also about the afterlife, another kind of existence, the spirits captured in a new animated movie.
We wanted very much to show and represent how powerful the Mexican visuals and sounds and music and the sense of life are, you know.
We get the behind-the-scenes story about how the Book of Life made it to the big screen. First, the news. This is Fronteras, the program that brings you stories from several member stations along the Southwest. I'm Crystal Chavez. This week, KERA, the Dallas Morning News, and NBC5 produced a series of reports called 5 Days in October. Each day, they looked at where the leading candidates for Texas governor stand on specific issues. For Fronteras, we're going to hear the report on border security. Stella Chavez looks at how Republican Greg Abbott and Democrat Wendy Davis differ on deploying National Guard troops along the Texas border.
This summer, Texas was in the national spotlight as thousands of unaccompanied children from Central America came across the border. Governor Rick Perry said he was also worried the border was so porous that drug cartels and human traffickers are crossing into Texas. So Perry ordered 1,000 National Guard troops and additional Department of Public Safety troopers to the border. Greg Abbott, the Republican running for governor, wholeheartedly supported the effort. Here's Abbott during the September 19th televised debate in McAllen.
The federal government failed to do its job. The federal government has the fundamental responsibility to secure and protect our border. It failed in its fundamental responsibility, but Texas will not stand idly by.
Democratic candidate Wendy Davis says she also supported extra law enforcement at the border, but during the debate in the Rio Grande Valley, she questioned the cost of sending the guard, over $3 million a week. She suggested it might make more sense to increase local or Department of Public Safety numbers instead.
When we spend money on something that was not requested by this local community, and we put boots on the ground that don't have detention and arrest authority, costing approximately $12 million a month, we are shortchanging our ability to do what will make a smart investment in the future of this state, an investment in our children.
Michelle Roy, a Tarrant County voter and Davis supporter, also questions having National Guard troops on the border. Roy, who tweeted during KERA's September 30th debate, says the state has far greater needs.
That's just a waste of money, in my opinion, that I'm paying for. What we need is more help with social services, more help with some of the church outreach. The National Guard is doing nothing.
Outside a Plano Starbucks, Kaufman County resident and Abbott supporter Roger Jones says he wants more security at the border. Still, he questions whether National Guard troops should be part of the plan.
Well, I mean, it would be well-spent money, in my opinion, if it would work. Because what they've done with all the money they've spent before, it's not doing any good. But will it work? I don't know.
Abbott is convinced it will. In addition to the guard, he says he would double the general revenue funds for DPS. Under that plan, he would add 500 DPS troops, 20 new Texas Rangers, and more technology and tools for surveillance. He also told a debate audience that his office is working on a potential lawsuit against the Obama administration for expenses incurred by the state and Rio Grande Valley cities, which had to pay for humanitarian relief for immigrants crossing the border.
Secure communities promote economic development, and we want to ensure that the community here in the Rio Grande Valley, as well as any community in the state of Texas, is going to be safe and secure.
While she stopped short of saying she would replace the guard with more local and state law enforcement, which are authorized to make arrests, she suggested that could be the best strategy.
We also should have asked those who have been serving the needs of folks who've been coming across the border, the humanitarian side of this issue, Catholic Charities and other faith faith-based and nonprofit organizations need our help.
So while both Abbott and Davis agree more law enforcement is needed to make the Texas border with Mexico more secure, they disagree on whether the National Guard should be a big part of that. Stella Chavez, KERA News.
You can find a link to KERA and its media partners' entire series, 5 Days in October, at tpr.org. It's an in-depth look at where the candidates for governor stand on the big issues facing the state of Texas. Tuesday, three families seeking asylum in the U.S. from Central America saw the outside of the Karnes County Residential Center for the first time in months. Texas Public Radio's Ryan Lloyd was there to document the moment when one of the women spoke about her journey.
It's the early evening right now, and the sun is still high in the sky. I'm standing right outside of the Karnes County Residential Center. The executive director of RAISIS, Jonathan Ryan, just drove up. He's walking toward us right now to give us an update on the release of the detainees. Hey, Jonathan, how are you?
So we're just coming out to let you know they're still processing the paperwork. We understand the bond was received earlier today. Took just a little over 3 hours to complete the whole process. We have, you know, by all accounts, confirmation that they should be released tonight. And so they're just undergoing the final stages now of the checks, is what we understand, and so they should be released.
Standing with Ryan is Dennis Winshuffle, an attorney with Aiken Gump, a law firm that's been fighting for immigrant rights.
It's really been fortunate that we've had Jonathan, his leadership and stuff, because this really is a crisis. It's a human rights crisis.
Winshuffle says the stories that come out of centers like this are horrible.
This facility is just women and children. And sometimes when the families come up across with the father or husband and stuff, they're actually separated. The second thing is these facilities were never really designed to house families. And so the kids, a lot of the kids are really traumatized. And we're finding that a lot of the kids aren't receiving the necessary medical and psychological counseling that they need to deal with these issues.
The first sight, they just walked out. Ryan and Winshuffle are walking toward us with their client.
Thank you all very much for coming out this evening. Margarita and her son Jose just got out of the Karnes Detention Center, and they're willing to say a few words here about their experience.
Me vine en bus de Honduras.
I came in a bus from Honduras.
Pues gasté 11,000 lempiras.
11,000 lempiras was the cost for her to get here.
No, nunca pensé ahí. Haber estado aquí. Pensé en firmar la deportación para irme.
She had been thinking about signing a deportation order to go because she was hopeless when she first got here.
Porque me duele recordar que mi mami se haya muerto. Y porque dejé unas amigas ahí.
So she was asking her why, if she looked happy, but she also looked sad, and it was because, you know, she's lost her mother and she lost friends who were back there. She's feeling sad to be separated from them. So it's a tough journey.
As Margarita makes her way back to the car to go to San Antonio, she's going to hop on a bus to California tonight. And as we leave Karnes County, Dennis Winshuffle, the attorney with Aiken Gump, leaves a final word.
Margarita is a brave woman, and this facility is filled with brave women. And the only way we can help them is if we get them bonded out. So
in Karnes County, I'm Ryan Lloyd, Texas Public Radio News.
The women will have to appear in court in their new city. Ultimately, they hope to gain asylum after fleeing the violence in their home country. The Texas-Mexico border is an area that generates plenty of headlines and also inspiration for fiction based on those headlines, such as the case for the short story collection The Border is Burning by San Antonio writer Ito Romo. Texas Public Radio's Yvette Benavidez spoke to Romo about his book and his relationship with the border.
The author Frank O'Connor wrote about the lonely voice and submerged populations of dreamers and idealists, and this is really sort of at the center of modern and contemporary short stories. So I'm curious to hear about your thoughts about your submerged population of these anti-heroes in your stories.
I think that these people, the characters in my stories, are very much like the people who live in South Texas. And there's a strange connection in this, in what happens between literature and society. Yeah. They look at each other and they record each other, and the people in my stories are in a place in the world where their setting dictates almost all of their lives. That setting is a setting that, right now is it has these amazing opposing forces. Yeah, good money and bad money, both just as powerful. And these are the people that we've kind of pushed to the edges of society, disenfranchised them, made them lepers, made them all those things that we don't want to see, so that in fact we don't see them anymore. And what I want to do with my work is I want to take, my stories are read very quickly, 8 minutes of your life, and let you feel what those people are because they're alive today.
This is true about the setting of the border. I mean, the border's an insular place. It's literally on the fringes, but then it's all we can see how it's also figuratively on the fringes for these folks that the rest of society doesn't want to know about, doesn't want to see. But the objects of manufacture in the setting are poverty, are low socioeconomic status, perhaps a lack of a formal education in many cases.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think that we use the term fringes of society when referring to the border in a very strange way, because I've lived, you know, my family's been living in Laredo or that part of Texas for a very, very long time, 1750 on one side, 1805 on the other. And that city has lived as one big city, Laredo and Nuevo Laredo. It's never been this kind of fringes of the United States. As a matter of fact, it was all Mexico for a very, very long time. And that's the attitude that I think that people need to start thinking about, rather than this kind of marginal space. It's more central as a border than 150 miles north of there.
If we consider Frank O'Connor's ideas about the lonely voice and that all characters in short fiction are looking for something, that all stories are about loss, I had the sense when I was reading your stories that your characters are searching for something and they're not quite sure always what that could be. They don't have the self-awareness of it, but they have the awareness that there's something out there that can quiet this malaise, that can quiet this gap, this void in their lives. And it might be drugs, but the drugs are really, it seems to me, almost a metaphor for something else.
I think that my characters are searching, not so much a search. To me, you know, when you say things like search, there's a value judgment that's inherent in the term. And I don't want to sugarcoat things. I just want to, you know, write them the way they are. I don't want to write an abuelita story. I want to write an abuelita story in which the kids die and they're poor in the car in a wreck.
Why is it important for you to take that snapshot of something that is steeped in verisimilitude, that is so real and so realistic?
Because these characters are not searching for anything. It's that kind of great American ideal, oh, we're always looking for something. And they're not. They're just doing the best with the hand they've been dealt, yeah? There's one thing that saves them all, and it's way more universal than what we were talking about, and it's dignity. Because no matter how miserable those people are, they all have a sense of dignity, and they're real. And despite the amazing forces, economic, social, religious, all of those, that are completely against them, lowest rates of high school graduation, you know, colonias that, you know, are as bad as third world countries in the United States.
I think it's important to underscore this idea that a lot of your stories and things that happen to the characters could happen anywhere else in the United States, and that's another bridge. You know, that's another way to bridge these differences. To say the border is burning is one thing, but the idea is also, no, we're all burning.
We're all burning, absolutely.
Ito Romo is a professor of literature at St. Mary's University. He is the current visiting writer at Our Lady of the Lake University's MA/MFA program in literature, creative writing, and social justice. Romo will have a reading on the campus of Our Lady of the Lake University on Wednesday, October 22nd in Providence West Social Room. His book, The Border is Burning, is published by University of New Mexico Press. Coming up, a new animated movie captures the spirit of Dia de los Muertos.
Here was this Mexican kid saying, hey, it's a movie about death for children. And so I kind of scared everybody, and everybody turned me down.
A behind-the-scenes look at how the Book of Life made it to the big screen. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm your host, Crystal Chavez. The Day of the Dead holiday is a chance for families to reminisce and remember the lives of loved ones who've passed on. The idea of crossing over into some kind of other existence captured the imagination of animator Jorge Gutierrez. He created a 3D film about the Day of the Dead. It's Gutierrez's first full-length feature, and he managed to convince an Oscar-winning Hollywood filmmaker to produce it. NPR's Mandalit Del Barco has their story, which first aired on NPR's Morning Edition earlier this week.
The Book of Life is set in 1920s Mexico and centers on three friends. Feisty Maria, voiced by Zoe Saldana.
Did I mention I studied fencing?
And her two suitors, Joaquin, the local stud, voiced by Channing Tatum.
Hey, girl. Oh. Get that a lot.
And soft-spoken Manolo, voiced by Diego Luna. He's supposed to follow his ancestors and be a bullfighter, but he doesn't want to and ends up apologizing to a bull in the ring.
I am sorry, Toro, I am sorry. Hear my song, I know I sing the truth. Although we were bred to fight, I reach for kindness in your heart tonight.
This being a Day of the Dead movie, some of the characters are transported to the afterlife, something Mexican-born director Jorge Gutierrez says has fascinated him ever since his childhood when his best friend died.
My parents let me down. Said your friend, Mauricio, he is with you. As long as you tell his jokes and you remember him and you keep his memory alive by talking about him.
And that's what Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, is all about, celebrating the lives of those who came before. Later, Gutierrez proposed to and then married his wife on the holiday so his friend Mauricio could be there.
I said, well, I want him to be the best man at my wedding, so we have to get married on Day of the Dead so he can come. He was at the wedding, and maybe it's the tequila talking, but I remember my favorite wrestlers showed up who had passed away. All these family members from different eras, I could feel they were there with us. And so with Day of the Dead being such a beautiful thing and such an important part of my life, I really wanted to pass that to the world.
As a student at the California Institute of the Arts, Gutierrez wrote his own Day of the Dead story with ideas and characters based on himself and his family. He used it to produce a 3D student film called Carmelo that won a 2001 Emmy and was shown at the Cannes Film Festival. Gutierrez tried pitching it as a full-length feature to all of the major studios.
Here was this Mexican kid saying, hey, it's a movie about death for children. And so I kind of scared everybody, and everybody turned me down. They said, you know, you're just a kid out of school, and this subject matter is too weird and honestly a little dark.
Gutierrez and his wife Sandra Ikiwa, by then his artistic partner, went on to create Mexican-themed cartoons for Sony and Nickelodeon, including El Tigre, The Adventures of Manny Rivera.
Son of White Pantera, a noble superhero.
Eventually, a studio in El Paso called Real Effects understood Gutierrez's idea for a Day of the Dead movie and encouraged him to approach Guillermo del Toro to produce it.
This will go down in the history of cinema as the worst pitch of all time.
Gutierrez says he took all the artwork he and his wife created for the film and set it up near the pool at his filmmaking hero's house in L.A.
And he goes, you have 5 minutes to pitch me. And before a word can come out, my people betray me. There must have been like 10 gardening guys in the house next door. And all the lawnmowers and leaf blowers went on at the same time, making this horrible noise. So I'm yelling the pitch because he says, don't stop. And then Manolo proposes with all his heart. And he can't hear me. And I almost fall in the pool 3 times. Disaster. So we go back into his house. And I'm drenched in sweat. He's sweating. And I'm ready to just shake his hand and get out of there and say I got to meet him. And Guillermo goes, Jorge, that was a terrible pitch. I go, I know, I'm so sorry I wasted your time. And, you know, I get up to shake his hand, and he goes, no, sit down. He goes, I know exactly who you are.
Yeah, my daughters and I used to watch El Tigre on TV, and we loved it. He has a uniquely Mexican style. And when he came in, I was already a fan.
Del Toro says he agreed to produce the Book of Life on the spot.
I could see through his nervousness how important it was to him. It's a gorgeous movie, and we wanted very much to show and represent how powerful the Mexican visuals and sounds and music and the sense of life are, you know.
The soundtrack includes Mexican bolero and norteño versions of songs by Radiohead, Rod Stewart, and Biz Markie.
You got what I need. But you say he's just a friend. But you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you.
Jorge Gutierrez says he wanted an older look for his film, so he reached back to folk art. He had a team of Central American artisans carve wooden puppets of the movie's characters, which were later rendered by computer animation, says producer Guillermo del Toro.
Jorge wanted to create this world that felt handmade, with wooden puppets and metal and paint. Really feels very much like a Mexican Baroque.
At the Book of Life premiere on Sunday, some of the audience members said they were glad Gutierrez's movie got to the screen before a proposed Disney-Pixar film on the same subject. Disney had tried to co-opt the very name of the holiday.
I, along with every other Latino pretty much, were outraged and shocked when Disney tried to copyright the term Día de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead.
Cartoonist Lalo Alcaraz says he's especially glad the Book of Life was directed and produced by two Mexicans.
To have two people that understand the topic thoroughly and respect it and can play with it, it was good. It's a playful way to treat a serious topic. You love your family, you know. You miss your family. One day you'll see your family again. And that's what the Day of the Dead holiday is all about, is remembering your family and remembering that love. So that's what Book of Life is about.
The Book of Life, written and directed by Jorge Gutierrez, opens 2 weeks before the Day of the Dead, November 2nd. Maybe his old friend Mauricio will visit a theater. Mandalit del Barco, NPR News.
I definitely want to visit a theater for that one. This story first aired on NPR's Morning Edition earlier this week. Fronteras is a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, where a collaboration of public radio stations along the southwest. Charanga Cakewalk composed this theme music. Missed a story? Want to hear it again or share it? Find the complete show audio at tpr.org. I'm Crystal Chavez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.